rangatira tira mā naumai ki te pai o te Waonui. Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Mani Dunlop ahau. Coming up this week on the Waonui, a study finds Māori are significantly more likely to die after surgery. Calls for tāne to get their prostates checked. Ngāti Whātua celebrates a Dome Valley decision with caution. And of course we celebrate te wiki o te reo Māori. But first, an Auckland couple who breached Auckland's lockdown to go to Wānaka have thrown name suppression into the spotlight. The pair obtained urgent interim name suppression before letting it lapse and apologising for their behaviour. RNZ can now reveal an analysis of Ministry of Justice figures, which shows Pākehā are granted name suppression three times as often as Māori. Te Aniwa Hurianga Nui reports.
When it comes to name suppression, it seems that who you are matters. Last year, Māori were charged with 41% of crimes, but only accounted for 18% of name suppression. Pākehā, on the other hand, were charged with 36% of crimes, but accounted for 68% of name suppression. Auckland lawyer Fletcher Pilditch says the disparity reflects a system skewed towards people of privilege.
The test of extreme hardship, you know, that's what you have to establish. There's no hard and fast rules about what extreme hardship might look like, but often the ground relates to the ability of the person to continue in some form of employment or professional capacity. But tragically, you know, many Māori offenders appearing before the courts, you know, are coming from, you know, a background of hardship and challenges and deprivation.
Pākehā earn more on average than Māori and are more likely to be able to afford a lawyer. The University of Canterbury's Dean of Law, Professor Ursula Chair, says quality legal representation is a huge advantage when it comes to name suppression.
People just saying, oh, you know, I'm very upset about this and I don't want my name to come out, that will never be enough. You've got to make a stronger case than that. And so having access to a good lawyer and being able to pay a good lawyer to do that for you is obviously an advantage.
The figures also raise questions about judges' bias. Fletcher Pilditch has doubts about whether judges are considering extreme hardship from a cultural perspective.
I don't know whether the test has been applied to sort of take into account questions of mana and how your own whānau or hapū are going to respond to these allegations and your feelings about that being known within the wider group.
But Māori barrister Quentin Duff does not believe bias is a factor. He suspects that Māori are simply not applying for name suppression as often as Pākehā.
You know, because they're not thinking ahead to the sort of the consequences. That's what I would back up, that notion that actually there's probably more to do with the perception of self than whether name suppression has a colour bias.
Due to some gaps in Ministry of Justice data, it's impossible to tell whether Māori are in fact applying less. But Chief Justice Helen Wynne-Kalman isn't ruling bias out.
As a judicial leader, however, I can't overlook the possibility that it also reflects unconscious bias on the part of the judiciary, and for that reason we educate judges to try to address that.
She says judges undertake unconscious bias training. Justice Wynne-Kalman accepts that wider societal factors cannot be ignored and admits that access to justice is more difficult for people with fewer resources.
It starts with the fact that they are unlikely to know about their rights. Then there's whether you can afford legal representation. Then even if you can afford legal representation or you've worked out enough to go to a tribunal or a court, there are then the filing fees you have to pay. So all the way along the way, people who have more resources have more opportunity.
Is that a just justice system?
I think it's something we have to be worried about.
The figures RNZ have revealed do not include automatic name suppression granted to protect the identity of victims.
Ah! Māori are significantly more likely to die after surgery than non-Māori. A new study published today in the New Zealand Medical Journal shows that no matter the type of surgery, a significant disparity exists. In some cases, the likelihood of death is more than double that of Pākehā. Jamie Tahana reports.
Otago University's Jason Gurney and his team looked at 3.9 million operations done between 2005 and 2017. They looked at instances where someone died within 30 days of an operation and found one common observation.
With a few exceptions, no matter where we look, Māori are more likely to die within 30 days of a surgical procedure.
The research, which Dr. Gurney described as a New Zealand first, worked out a ratio that 1.1 Māori will die for every 100 acute operations performed. The ratio for Europeans is 0.7. After elective or waiting list operations, the ratio is 0.2 for Māori, but only 0.1 for European. Dr. Gurney says those numbers reveal what he calls a distressing disparity.
They sound like small numbers, but when you're looking at millions of procedures, it adds up to a lot of deaths. And in a sense, it also adds up to preventable deaths. If there was equality between Māori and Europeans, fewer Māori would die. That's the bottom line.
Auckland surgeon Jonathan Coyer, who's also on the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons Māori Advisory Group, says a disparity has always been assumed, but the extent wasn't known. He says the numbers released today are damning.
You know, it's an uncomfortable read that, you know, Māori are twice as likely to die after amputations as non-Māori, one-third more likely to die after bowel resections, about 25% more likely to die after cardiac surgery. Those are not small figures of a few percentage points. Those are quite big proportional increases.
Jason Gurney says even with several variables accounted for, the disparity is still there. That, he says, points to something more systemic.
The stark disparities that we show in our paper are controlled for comorbidity. So even in the presence of comorbidity, even if you take that out of the equation, Māori are still much more likely to die within that post-operative period. So it can also point us towards maybe other things to focus our attention on.
Both Dr. Gurney and Professor Coyer say there are many possible contributing factors. Māori have higher rates of underlying health issues, but also poorer access to primary health care. Research shows that often Māori receive a different standard of post-operative care. Māori are also more likely to have surgery in smaller, limited-capacity hospitals, although the disparity is across the system. Dr. Gurney says it all points to a need for wholesale changes to how things are done.
Māori men are being urged to go get their prostates checked to stop more tāne from dying of prostate cancer. And as Mate O'Connor reports, Māori men are twice as likely to die from the disease.
Te Iwi Mihaka was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2018. As the 73-year-old started talking to people about it, he had a realisation. Health was a topic too many people were trying to avoid.
And they were telling me about how very few people actually talk about it and keep hiding from it. So I thought, well, you know, I'm here, I've learned all these things, and if I can help somebody by sharing it, then happy to do it.
Mr. Mihaka is one of more than 4,000 New Zealanders a year diagnosed with prostate cancer. It's the second most common cause of cancer death in men. Although fewer Māori men are diagnosed with prostate cancer than non-Māori, recently published research shows tāne are more than twice as likely to die from it. One of the authors, Dr. Jackie Kidd from AUT, says there's a multitude of reasons.
Most of that is because Māori men are diagnosed later, and there's a whole range of reasons why that might be, that go from not getting symptoms checked out as early as others might, through to the systemic racism in the system that means that Māori men meet with race-based barriers at each step of their journey.
For Mr. Mihaka, the treatment worked. He's been given the all clear by his doctors and is now happily retired in Port Chalmers. He says he hopes talking about his health will prompt other Māori men to talk about theirs.
If we can get the word out to anybody else, even just one person, it's got to be a big help.
The general manager of Dunedin-based Māori health provider Te Rōpū Tautoko ki Te Tonga, Christine Maxwell, says that's important. They have been showing a film to groups in the South Island that features different Māori men who had prostate cancer. She says it's one of the most powerful ways to get men along to their doctors before it's too late.
After the viewing of the video out at Puketaraki, up the line at the marae, one of our pakeke, who not long been diagnosed, he was far more open. It gave him permission to kōrero about what was going on.
They are hoping planned changes to the health system will help address the imbalance. But in the meantime, they're urging Tāne Māori to go and get checked.
Ariare mai o koutou taringa ki Te Wao Nui. You are listening to Te Wao Nui, a wrap-up of the week's Māori news here on RNZ National. Ko Mani Dunlop tēnei. Across the motu this week, people came together to celebrate Te Reo Rangatira, and those behind its revitalisation say the language is at a point it hasn't been in generations. At the Pinnacle event on Tuesday, dubbed the Māori Language Moment, more than 1 million people took part. But with huge wait lists for classes and a COVID outbreak cancelling a lot of gatherings, attention is turning to how that momentum can be sustained. Jamie Tahana kicks off our coverage from the week.
On the 14th of September 1972, a group of Māori, young and old, arrive at Parliament in the rain, their petition in hand signed by more than 30,000 people. Toru Waka was a young university student at the time who helped rally support and collect signatures.
I was part of Ngā Tamatoa in those days, and we would go out around different places, hotels, clubs, places where people, Māori congregated, marae, etc., to try and get them to sign the petition.
And one of the celebrations to come in the wake of the petition is Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori, the Māori Language Week. The Māori Language Commissioner, Victoria University Professor Rawinia Higgins, says it's important to look back to appreciate just how much the language has been revitalised.
You know, that was at a time when we spent a lot of time protesting for recognition of the language. And the petition marks a significant moment, particularly in the conscientisation of the value of te reo Māori in the country.
Today, Professor Higgins says the reo is at a point it hasn't been in generations. In the last decade, the number of people of all ethnicities who can hold a conversation in te reo Māori has gone up by tens of thousands. And there's a wait list of about 2,000 people for classes, with not enough teachers.
It's almost like a good problem to have, right? That we've got such demand, and now we have to try and work out ways to be able to support the system to be strong enough to take on board more learners of the language and support them with their acquisition of te reo Māori.
Despite the growth, the language is still classified as endangered. Toru Waka says hostility remains. Just look at the current debate around the use of Aotearoa, or take a dive into your nearest comments section. But he says it pales in comparison to 49 years ago.
There's just this big shift. You know, I think we're in a time of change, and I think it's up to our young people to, and there's a lot of them now who are a bit more conscious of the way things have been and their aspirations for the future. So, yeah, I've got a lot of confidence that things will get better.
One confronting fact, however, is that young people are losing their fluency in te reo Māori after moving from Kohanga Reo Okura Kaupapa to mainstream schools. Te Aniwa Hurihanga Nui reports.
Imagine growing up only ever speaking te reo Māori. Everyone you know speaks it too. Your parents, your teachers, your friends. Then it suddenly changes. You step into an environment where no one can speak your language. Well, that's what happened to Marae Nui Te Wano when he moved to Auckland.
There was no one that spoke Māori in my primary school, intermediate, even my high school. None of the teachers really encouraged it. The only teachers, obviously, that encouraged it were the Māori teachers.
Learning in a new language wasn't the only challenge.
There was a bit of stigma to, like, being Māori at a Pākehā school. And I've seen, like, really great examples of Māori, but all these people are telling me that we're these bush Māoris or we're the unqualified, not very smart. I didn't want to speak in Māori.
Mm.
Because none of them would understand and I'd probably get, I don't know, put down.
It's taken years for Mr. Te Wano to speak Te Reo Māori again and be proud of his cultural identity. He's now enrolled in a full-time Māori language course to develop his knowledge and confidence. But his experience is one of many. Former Māori broadcaster Te Kuru o Te Marama Jews also entered English medium schooling after leaving Kōhanga Reo and Kura Kaupapa.
It was a massive culture shock. There were lots of things for me to figure out really quickly. I'd been in immersion education my whole life. One of the key reasons why I was able to maintain it was that it was always reinforced at home.
Secondary Principals Association President Vaughan Quio acknowledges that many secondary schools are not equipped to provide students a high level of Māori language learning.
And I don't think there's any will or willingness lacking anywhere in the country, in any school. What is difficult is to find the personnel to do what you want to do.
He says a chronic shortage of Māori language teachers persists and retaining them is difficult because they're in such hot demand. A 2019 national survey of primary schools found the same issue, with more principals reporting difficulties finding Māori language teachers than in 2016. Māori Language Commissioner Professor Rā Winia Higgins says schools can still normalise te reo by encouraging students to kōrero at every opportunity.
You need to find opportunities for people to be able to use the language, and so ensuring that they get to use the language as often as possible is a key part to helping to develop proficiency.
Anā ko tērā te wero, and the demand is there. The number of students learning te reo Māori at English medium schools has risen every year since 2015.
But if te reo Māori is to survive, non-Māori must speak and learn the language too. That's the message from the head of the Māori Language Commission, Te Tau Rāwhiri. Here is Te Aorewa Rolleston.
You may have heard Te Reo Māori being spoken a lot more this week. It's been embraced by our public health officials.
Tuatahi, e mihi ana ki a koutou katoa, e whakarongo mai ana.
Used by our national broadcasters.
Kia kaha te reo Māori, let's make the Māori language strong.
And sung by some of our favourite artists. Mai ana, te hotoke, waiho. Māori have been driving te reo revitalisation efforts for decades, but non-Māori have become increasingly involved too. The number of Pākehā who can speak te reo is on the rise, jumping from 40,000 in 2006 to more than 58,000 in 2018. Te Tau Rāwhiri Chief Executive Ngāhi Weapanui acknowledges that it can be conflicting for many Māori to see Pākehā speak the language when they can't speak it themselves. But he says the language will only survive if non-Māori are embracing it too.
Now my relations get a bit, you know, they get a bit sensitive about it. Well, what do you want all these Pākehā to speak Māori for, you know? And I'm saying, well, you know, bro, you know how you moaned about not being able to go to the bank and do your transactions in Māori? Yeah, well, the ones at the bank have to learn, and most of them are Pākehā, right? Okay, you know, so I'm really pleased with it. I just love it, and I just hope that it continues to grow.
Latest census data shows nearly 17,000 Pacific people can now speak te reo conversationally, up from 11,000 in 2013. The number of Asian people who can speak te reo has also increased since the last census to more than 3,000. Hui Ping Wu is a Taiwanese immigrant and has been learning te reo on and off for the last 3 years.
Te reo is one of the official language, and for someone like me, even though I'm an immigrant to New Zealand, I feel that it's something that we should learn.
Former broadcaster Nicole Rex is another Te Reo Māori learner and she's from Niue. She says the language has opened her eyes to te ao Māori.
That whole stuff around why you do the pepeha, why we do these traditions, why tikanga is important, you know, it all comes with that.
A 2018 survey by Stats NZ found nearly 6 out of 10 Māori adults can understand te reo, and almost half can speak more than a few words or phrases.
Koina te wao nui mō tēnei wiki, and that is te wao nui for this week. Kei tō mātou whārangi ipurangi, tō mātou pūrongo hei kemi mau, kei raro I te tapanga te ao Māori. You can find all of our stories on our website rnz.co.nz under the te ao Māori section, or flick us a like on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Noho ora mai kia tau te Māori whānau, tēnā tātou katoa.